It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Man, it's good to have you guys here. You guys excited for another round of Money for Lunch? Man, you know what? From the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you for your emails, your Twitters and your Facebook. I appreciate the support. We appreciate the fact that you guys give us show suggestions, topic ideas, guest ideas, all the stuff makes Money for Lunch your show. We appreciate the fact that you guys listen and respond, and it makes a world of difference. So thank you. Thank you so very much. And if you have an idea, you can reach out to us on Twitter, on Facebook, at bert@bertmartinez.com is my email. Send me your thoughts, your ideas. How can we make the show better? Who can we invite? What is it you want to know? And we'll do our best to make it happen. Our first guest today, Michael Eastman. Michael Eastman is the founding principal of Fellowship Financial Group in Altamont Springs, Florida. Mr. Eastman has been involved in financial services for over 25 years. He's an active member of the American Institute of CPAs and has earned their personal financial specialist designation. Mr. Eastman serves as chairman of the Leadership Seminole Board of Directors and treasurer of the Seminole County Regional Chamber of Commerce of Directors. He teaches adult education courses and continuing education for CPAs, financial planners, insurance professionals, attorneys, and the Florida Association of Realtors. Mr. Eastman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Bert, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet, you bet. All right, so let's talk about this. Just real quick, I want to get your opinion on the current market. What's your thoughts?
Well, I've been talking for a long time with my clients and folks in my classes and training workshops about how the stock market, I mean, it's really at a high point. I mean, if you look back over the last 15 years and you see, well, what has the market done? Well, I mean, it has certainly had some peaks and valleys. But if you are a buy and hold investor who bought into that that mantra from back in the 1980s and 90s, well, the reality is you haven't had a lot of decent returns. So you have to think about where we are in what economists refer to as a secular stock market or a secular cycle. And the way I look at it is the market is very high right now. And if you are a risk taker, then this is probably a good time to take some of the gains off the table.
Interesting. So are you thinking that because the market has been high and we're starting to see a lot of the similarities between what's happening now and, let's say, what happened in 2007, 2008, do you think we're going to have a little
right
burst of a bubble?
I think it's very likely that we're going to have a little more than a burst. I think I've done a lot of study of stock market history over the last 200 years, but one of the things that I've discovered is that markets go through these long economic cycles where, you know, a bear market cycle from an economic standpoint, a secular cycle is about 20 years. If you look back to the 1800s and the 1900s, that's what you find. The bull markets last about 15 years. So, you know, again, if you're someone who believes, generally speaking, that history tends to repeat itself like I do, and, you know, most of my listeners and most of our clients do, then this current bear market cycle that we're in is not going to be any different. And in that vein, every single one of the past bear markets, we've seen at least three major corrections. And those corrections they're somewhat repeatable. And so we've only seen two. We saw the drop from 2000 to 2003, and then, as you correctly mentioned a moment ago, 2007 to 2009. So now we're at the high point. We're at an all-time market high, and we've seen some weakening of the knees. So I certainly believe that this is very indicative of moving into that next correction, that third correction.
Yes. And you know what? And I'm glad you brought this up, because really, if you look at the market, it is, we call it, you can see that there are these corrections, right? You have the, you know,
right.
every bull is followed by a bear, and every bear is followed by a bull.
Right. That's right. All right, so, and if you think about what has happened since 2009, which was the bottom of the last cyclical drop, well, the market's increased by 150%. That's a pretty nice increase. And so think about that and say, well, maybe it is a good time to take some of those gains off the table, because what I say a lot of times is that pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered. So it's you know, you got to have the guts to sell high so that you can keep those gains, and that's what it's all about. Unfortunately, too many investors tend to buy high and sell low, the opposite.
Right, right. So when you say, okay, so let's say that I start pulling my gains out of the market, and do what? Mm-hmm. Just put them in cash? Just kind of leave it there and waiting for the market to drop? What should I do with all that gain?
Yeah, Bert, that's a great question. Well, it depends. Every investor is going to be a little bit different. But, I mean, first of all, if you want to be ultra-conservative, then certainly there's nothing wrong with putting money in cash, setting it on the sidelines. But if you're somebody who needs income because you're retired or for whatever reason you need to supplement your income, well, listen, there's a whole universe of investment options that exist out there, probably 9 or 10 different things that are – generally considered to be less risky than common stocks and mutual funds, including bond funds, by the way, and yet they pay interest consistently or dividends on a consistent basis. And those things can provide somewhat predictable income during a volatile time period like we're in right now.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, so let me get your take on this, because we're mm-hmm. also seeing a lot of volatility in, let's say, our good friends there in China. They own a lot of our debt. We're seeing a lot of shakeup over there. So what's your thought as far as, you know, any effect from there, or have we already seen the effects of China, or is it going to get worse?
Well, I think China's they're a big player in the world economy, so we have to be observe what's going on there. Just the fact that I don't think China is kind of going backwards in terms of their economy. They're going to continue to grow, just not as fast as they have in the last several years. So it's definitely going to have an impact on the world economy. That has, that certainly has a tremendous effect on what we're doing and the way that U.S. investors invest. So, yeah, I mean, you look at the United States, and globally, many countries around the world are looking to the U.S. for leadership. And the funny thing is, we're not growing that dramatically either. The U.S. is kind of the cleanest dirty shirt in the laundry basket, if you will. And so we're doing okay, but on a global front, there's still a lot of instability that exists out there, and it has tremendous amount to do with, you know, the quantitative easing that we've seen over the last several years. So it's been somewhat of a artificial increase in the market. It hasn't been based on true economic growth, and that's why people have to be really careful.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about this. Again, you know, you have been, in the financial services industry for over 25 mm-hmm. years. You publish books. You've also have a a radio show called Your Home, Your Money for over 8 years. What are you telling people? What are you telling the public or your clients? How are you advising people to take action in the current market?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, what we're telling people to do is to be careful, you know, and certainly take some of the gains back. Too many people wait around. They wait for that extra 4% or 5%, or as I mentioned before, you've seen the market increase by about 150% from the bottom in 2009. So just the sheer momentum, Bert, could push it up maybe another 10%. But do you want to be the one that holds on to try to get that – to eke out another 10% upside when you know that the downside risk is 60% just to get back to where it was in 2009? It's kind of like if you went to a casino, and you guys probably aren't too far from Las Vegas. I mean, so maybe this will hit home. If you go to a casino and you realize when you sit down at the table that, hey, if I win, I win $10. If I lose, I lose $60. A pretty good chance you're not going to be sitting at that table. Am I right?
Right. Absolutely correct.
And, that's the risk that a lot of people are taking right now.
Right. No, I like that analogy. And I also want to use your analogy about pigs get fed and hogs get slaughtered.
Right.
Yeah. So
I agree.
Vegas is built on hogs.
Right. You're exactly right.
If you go to Vegas and you're winning and you get up and walk away, you know, if everybody did that, then Vegas wouldn't be Vegas. They would have to close.
That's right.
But you know, I like this idea. Yes, you know what? Many years ago when Yahoo was just climbing through the charts, I mean, it was just – every day, you know, it seemed like they were splitting stock and this and that. And I remember that my advisor at that time said, hey, you know, Bert, it's time to get out. I mean, you know, Yahoo is doing really well, but we don't know why it's doing so well. I mean, it doesn't have, you know, the fundamentals aren't there. So we're advising our clients to get out. And that's what I did. I went ahead and got out. There were a lot of people who stayed in there and continued to make money for another 3 or 4 months. And then it dropped. And just like you're talking about, it dropped substantially. It dropped 30, 40, 50 points because the market had to equalize. Now, some of those people made more money than I did, but some of them, as we've been talking about, took a huge hit. And, you know, when you get out, like what you're talking about now, if you pull your money out right now, worst case scenario, you're going to have peace of mind. You made some profit. You take the money out, and now you can look back and say, okay, now what do I want to do? You can wait. You can invest it in something else, as you talked about. There's so many options available to you when you take out your gains. There are no options available when you lose it all or lose 50 or 60 or 70%. I mean, at that point, you got to just ride it out.
That's right. And that's the scary part. You hit it right on the head. And the funny thing is when you talk about Vegas, and I totally agree with your point, which was basically that the profits, the massive profits that are made by casinos are not based on the winners. They're based on the losers. And that's unfortunately what happens to a lot of stock market investors. Now, listen, you have to realize I'm not anti-stock market. You know, we're a securities licensed firm. I'm a registered investment advisor. And yet it's just the strategies that we deploy are based on where we are in a particular long-term secular market cycle. Because for a lot of people, and again, you mentioned it just a moment ago, even the gains that some people have, it's kind of a misnomer, because these are people who, a lot of folks that I deal with are baby boomers and business owners, and they probably got in the market maybe in the 90s when the market was doing really, really well. But from 2000 to where we are today, you know, you've made maybe 20% over a 15-year period of time. That comes out to about 1.5%. And for many people, the gains, the massive gains that they've had in the last 5.5 years or so have really only been a recovery. So that's another reason why you have to look at your position, you have to look at where you are, and you have to ask yourself, you know, do I really need to get a 20% gain, or am I okay with 4, 5, 6, 7%? Am I okay with that? If you're okay with that level, well, listen, there's a whole spectrum of investments that can provide you that type of conservative income via interest and dividends so that you don't have to lose sleep at night.
Yeah. And you know what? Again, I cannot stress, you know, the peace of mind you get when you have that, you know, again, you're taking your gains and now you're reinvesting it in something that is paying you, like you said, 3 or 4 or 5%.
Right.
That's a smart thing to do. Look, there's a lot of, I think it was, and this will, again, date me. This guy, I'm trying to think, what was his name? Dang it. Dallas billionaire, ran for president.
Ross Perot.
Thank you. Ross Perot when I was a young man, he was the first guy that I heard him talk about, you know, making 3% on bonds, right? You know, taking the money and putting it into these secured bonds and making 3%. Mm-hmm. And 3% sounds like, man, who wants to waste their time on that? But it's a secured 3%. It's more money than you're going to get from the bank, and it's growing. 3% beats a negative number any time of the year.
That's right. It really does. And that's very important to point out to your listeners, is that you look at what your parents and grandparents learned. What were some of those lessons that they learned from the Great Depression? It was, I want to preserve my principal, and I want to live off the interest. I refer to that. Here's another analogy for you: the goose that lays the golden eggs. If you're nurturing the goose and you're feeding it, taking care of it, well, the goose is going to keep laying more eggs. That interest or the dividends or the eggs. But if you start pulling feathers off and pulling parts off the goose, well, guess what? You got nothing left.
Yes.
And that's the whole idea, is trying to in tumultuous times, or if you're retired and you need to rely on income, well, let's look at interest alternatives that can provide you a reasonable amount for the rest of your life, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yes, absolutely. I love that so much, and I think that there's so many options out there. Michael, we're out of time, but I'd love to bring you back and talk more. We didn't get to some of the other things that we wanted to hit, but. Michael Eastman, thank you so much for stopping by, and as soon as we can, we'd love to have you back.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Bert, and you guys have a great week.
All righty. Good stuff there from financial expert advisor Michael Eastman on what you should do with your money. Get it out now while it's safe, and start looking for maybe a more conservative return, but yet preserving the golden goose, right? Because that's all that matters. Is how much money you keep and how much money you save and how you get that money to make more money for you. Money that makes you money is a really sexy thing, man. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, guys, we're back. My next guest, Coach Chris, or Coach as he likes to be called, is the founder of Veterans Listening Post, BLP for short. BLP is an interactive program awareness enhancing listening between the civilian population and our veterans and military. It's called BLP Connect, and it recognizes the process. The program focuses on the power of positive listening. Positive listening equals positive results. He is a coach, is a public speaker for BLP's life-changing 10-step listening program, mentor for the Jobless Warrior program for veterans, fundraiser for Silver Lining Village Holistic Services, a 501c3 corp, and as well as a non-for-profit veteran Silver Line. Oh, it's just the .com, silverliningvillages.com. Chris Uzi, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Well, thank you very much, Bert. And what a great way to just say everything for me. I appreciate it very much.
You bet. Now, this is kind of interesting. I'm so glad that you came up with this program because, you know, a lot of us, civilians, when we come across a veteran and sometimes even a disabled vet or even, you know, maybe somebody who's in service and they're wearing their uniform, sometimes we're not really sure what to say. And this is kind of a nice thing to talk about.
It is. Listening in any form is magic, you know, and you know, all veterans have something to say. And interesting enough, even the listeners or us, we want to listen to what they have to say. Just by listening, there's a lot of things you can say. So I took this program, and I enjoy what I do, and that's a part of what I do.
All right, so what was the brainchild behind this? What motivated you to do this?
Well, being a Vietnam veteran, coming out of the service, there wasn't too many people saying thank you for your service at that time. So it was a little pent up through all the years of learning how to listen. And fortunately, when I got in a position where I could give back to the vets, I started this program of listening. And I felt that just by pausing, giving some time, letting a veteran talk how they feel they want to talk, was just magic. I would sit down, you know, I was a coach, a veterans coach, and I would do their resumes, and I would do job interviews for them. But the most important thing that they loved is that I would sit there 20 minutes and listen to them, then just shake their hand, and we'd go on from there. So with that brain trial, I developed some, you know, listening personal techniques and universal listening techniques.
All right, so let's talk about that. When you say personal versus universal, what are you referring to? What does that look like?
Okay, so for instance, on a personal listening, just if you're walking in the supermarket or you were in an airport and you see a veteran who, you know, as veterans, we like to put the information on our hats and we like to wear our hats proudly. And it's
sure.
Just a simple thing by saying, hey, I like your hat. It brings attention to the hat. The veteran gets the information, and you get the information, and the both of you could just pass. But there's just something magical that happens by just saying to a veteran, you like your hat. So that's personal listening.
I like that. I like that. All right, so that's personal listening. What's what's a universal listening?
Well, universal listening is that, you know, not all the time can we see vets every day or anything like that. But let's say we're on – we go to the newspaper or a magazine, and we're going to read things that we like, that we're attracted to. And that's great. But then there might be an article about a vet or about situations that have to do with military. So if we go out of our way and we start reading those articles and then becoming a little bit more informed, we're actually universally listening to some of the issues and situations that has to do with veterans and military. So that's universalism.
Gotcha. I like that. Because really the personal, you know, the personal is exactly that. It's personal. You're like the hat reference or walking up to a vet and saying thank you so much or something like that. That's obviously very personal versus the universal is kind of a broad stroke kind of a thing.
Yes. Well, actually, you know, we all post things on social media. And
yes.
If anybody has the opportunity, universal listening would be if you have the opportunity at any time to say four words that, geez, I like this article. I think I like what the veterans are saying, or even the opposite of meaning you want to champion the veterans or the military in some way. That's universal listening for you to post something on. That's all people saying something. With social media is so powerful for us vets now to say something that becomes social media. So, and that becomes universal listening, actually.
I like that example. Absolutely. And all right. So tell me this, when did you start the veterans? Veterans listening post.
Well, in 2009, I came out of the public sector and working for the transportation company, and I retired and felt that, you know, I had more to give. And I've always been involved with the veterans organizations all through my life, and then I took it upon it as a real-life mentor, and that's what I've been doing for, you know, all these years. I go around, I talk, and I help guys with how to get jobs, figuring out their resumes, which is all important. And
sure.
Really, you know, one of the things is I try not to, you know, there's times when us veterans and us military need special help. And so special help is out there. And there's wonderful type of people who are specialized in situations that may arise where the veteran really needs help. But I stay with the positive. I always try to take a story and do it a turnaround, which means, hey, what value did you get? What resources do you have from your service? And how can we use it now, right now? And how can we use it in listening is communication, and how we could listen to you so you could get a better format for where you want to go, your goals.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, one of the things that I want to stress here, and this is so important, I want people to really pay attention to this, and that is people like yourself. By the way, thank you for serving in Vietnam.
Thank you.
So we have our veterans who do so much for us, and these are, for the most part, these unsung heroes. You guys will go and serve, and some of you guys come back great. Some of you guys come back, injured. Some don't make it back, and not enough is mentioned. The military budget is the largest budget that we have, and in my opinion, it's the allocation needs to be adjusted, because there are a lot of our vets and their families, not vets, but in some cases it does include the vets, but there's a lot of our military people that are serving our country and are living on really $6 and $7 and $8 type an hour wage, which to me is ridiculous. You cannot, how can you have somebody do what the military does for us, and not reward them? Again, they don't have to be rewarded outrageously, but at least give them a livable wage. And this is the thing that really frustrates me the most: when they come back, make sure that they get the benefits that they need. There's so many of our vets that struggle getting the help that they deserve.
Yes. Yes, Bert, I want you on my team.
Well, and that's why, and that's why things like, the Veterans Listening Post, BLPost.com for short, Veterans Listening Post is so important. And you know what? I have another gentleman who is one of our regulars on our show here, Francis Jackson, and I'll make an introduction to you after the show. Francis Jackson works with veterans, and he helps. He's one of those guys who helps people, veterans, get their benefits. And so I'll make that connection, and you guys may be able to do something together. But this is so important, because our veterans are sometimes forgotten. And just going from military service and then getting readjusted to civilian life can be a big thing.
Yes.
As you mentioned, helping them go through job interviews and role play. One of the hardest things that I have found, having interviewed multiple veterans, is that if you were in the military, let's say a tank mechanic, well, what do you do with that skill once you leave the military? How do you now take that skill and apply it to civilian life? And for a lot of veterans, that can be very frustrating.
Yes. Yes, what the good parts are that would carry out is the discipline in it, the fact that you stayed with what you were doing. And so what the Veterans Listening Post looks at is to transform those particular values that you took, and you could still use it in military into civilian life. But
yes.
I have one more subject, and it's a little fun, if I may. Okay?
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
It's the rock star versus military. So let's all think that we're walking down a street and we meet a celebrity. And what happens when we meet a celebrity? Well, our heart beats a little bit, and our knees might buckle a little bit, and then the celebrity might come up to us and say, "Hey, where's the Starbucks?" And we give him answers. So right after that, we would be on the phone and telling everybody, our relatives, how wonderful it is that we met a celebrity. So think about that. If we transform that as we're walking in the airport and we see that Marine in that beautiful uniform, do we feel that this guy, he took an oath and he's going to defend 350 million people at any cause, whether he likes you or not? I think we should get – our heart should beat a little enough, and we should have our legs go a little as we see that person pass. So,
you know what? I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
I think
idea.
They're rock stars.
They are rock stars. Look,
they are. You absolutely.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with that. Look. Somebody as an actor who's playing a military character pales in comparison to the guys and the women who do it for real.
Yeah.
And so you got this guy on the big screen. You got this guy on the big screen who's getting paid millions of dollars to pretend. And then we have the real people who get, in my opinion, insufficient money. And again, some of the times their family struggle to make ends meet. And sometimes they don't get treated fairly. And sometimes they don't get their benefits without all sorts of rigmarole and red tape. And so I agree with you. Look, if you come across, you know, these fine folks and maybe they're retired and they're wearing a cap, you know, say thank you. Let them know how much it's appreciated. If you find somebody who maybe is in their uniform, same thing, you know, say thank you.
Yeah.
Let them know how much it's appreciated. And if by chance their children are around, let them know that this person is a hero. Let them know, let the children know that their service is not in vain, that these guys are true blue heroes, and that their kids should know that when mom and dad are away protecting our country, that we love them for it and we support them.
Wow. Very good.
All right. You know, I think what you're doing here is so vitally important. It really is. There's just not enough good things to be said about the Veterans Listening Post, VLPost.com for short. If you guys have a chance, go visit Chris and his team at VLPost.com. Let them know how much he's appreciated. Find out what you can do to get personal or universal with supporting Veterans Listening Post, VLPost.com, and maybe donate or, you know, donate some money or donate some time. I'm sure Chris will let you know how you can help. Chris, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Okay. Thank you so much, Bert. Appreciate it.
You bet. All righty. Good stuff there from Chris Uzi. You know, a hero. He served in the Vietnam War. He continues to serve his fellow veterans as they start to cycle back into civilian life. And it takes no money to reach out and say thank you to our military people. And you can do it on Facebook, Twitter. You can just reach out your hand and say thank you. It's the easiest thing to do, and it'll make you feel good. I guarantee you. You'll also brighten their day as well. We're going to take a quick commercial break.
It is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing.
Awful. How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Brandon Gallagher, founder and CEO of Vooper Technologies. V-U-B-E-R. Vooper Technology develops high-quality vaporizers and has grown from a small startup to a leading brand in the state of Washington. Recently, Vooper expanded from Washington and is now available in many states throughout the nation. Brandon Gallagher, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me.
All right, let's talk about this. What is it about vaporizers that seems to be just exploding? What's the attraction?
Well, I mean, it's a couple different things. First of all, vaporizers itself, its own industry, was growing very, very fast in and of it by itself. And then, obviously, the cannabis industry is growing very fast. So put the two together, and we got one fast-growing industry. So it's just a, you know, it's fun. They're easy to use. They're very discreet, and so you don't have to, you know, break out your bong or
right.
or whatever you have, your pipe. You can just literally, you know, vape while you're walking down the street. And I think that's the one of the coolest things that, you know, that attracts people to vaporizers themselves. And they're just fun to use, and people like the technology that goes along with them.
Sure, sure. And I think that, you know, we're just seeing the early stages of vaping. I'm kind of excited to see how the technology develops. So let me ask you this. So here you are, maybe sitting at home or whatever. What was the catalyst? What was the motivation for you to want to decide to get into the vaporizing business?
Well, you know, I saw the industry, obviously I'm out of Washington, so I saw the industry developing. I'm very close with some medical patients, so I saw how it helped them and how important the medicinal side was. And I saw a huge potential new fun industry that I could be a part of. And so, that's basically the gist of it I didn't want to be one of the producer processors or growers or one of the retail stores, because we'd be bound by all those laws. So I figured if we can go into the ancillary, the picks and shovels of the gold rush. I mean, this is the Wild West right now. And,
sure.
You know, and so we aren't bound by all those rules and regulations. We can go nationwide. We can go to all 50 states. We can go worldwide. And so that's one of the things attracted me to the vaporizer side. And obviously this industry is just, it's very fun. It's very new. It's going to potentially 10 years from now be one of the, maybe if not number one, but definitely number top three, top five industries ever, I think. And so that's a very, very cool thing to be a part of.
Absolutely. And I like what you said there. I hope everybody picked up on this, so I want to emphasize this. You decided to be the pick and the shovels, right? You know, you don't have to be, you know, what do you call it, manufacturer or grower or whatever you want to call it. You don't have to do this big thing. You could just get a piece of the action by supplying some of these relevant little tools to make the industry better. And I love this idea, this concept of picks and shovels, because sometimes as entrepreneurs, you know, we forget that, you know, our job is to solve problems, and we don't have to solve necessarily, let's say, big problems, but if we solve some of the small problem in the right time, right market, it can still be a big, big deal.
Oh yeah, I mean when you look at some of the industries, a lot of the ancillary part of those industries are the people that actually make the most money. Like the right now, for example, the accountants, the lawyers, of course, they're always making their money, and then companies like ours, software companies. So those growers, those retail stores are going to make, they're going to make a lot of money. They're going to do very well.
Yes.
But if you do it right in the ancillary part of the industry, then you have a lot of potential for growth and not as many laws to abide by as well when it comes to state by state.
Right, right. And you know what? And what I'm waiting for is one of the big tobacco companies to get, you know, to start gobbling up these growers, right? Sooner or later. I mean, I know that they're sitting there salivating. They're waiting to get in. And what's so nice about this, again, I want to just emphasize, is that no matter what's happening in the market, whether big tobacco comes in and starts doing their thing with these growers, again, you are providing an ancillary service that doesn't matter who the top dog is, your product is still viable. Your solution is something that's going to complement no matter who the leaders are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Will the big brands be, you know, number one on their list to be bought up? Of course they will. And will some of the brands suffer when it comes to retail and the growers? Yeah, of course.
Sure.
And could they go after, you know, the companies like us? Yeah, of course they can. But, you know, I think that's 18 months, 2 years away, hopefully. And
right.
I know some of them are like the pharmaceutical industry and big tobacco. You know, the big boys are already trying to find a way in and have found a way in, and or they're basically basically, you know, in essence, working for another company and just gathering information. And so it's going to be very interesting when they do come in heavy in the banks, and, you know, it's descheduled, and, you know, it's federally deregulated, and the banks can come in and the big boys can come in, because we'll see a whole different ball game. This will go from the Wild West to a legitimate, not to say that it's not a legitimate industry, but a more legitimate industry.
Right. We're going to see what happened with Prohibition. Millionaires, yep, and billionaires were made once Prohibition was done away with, and we're seeing that happen here. You're going to,
yep,
see some billionaires coming from this industry on multiple sides, so it is exciting to watch. Let's talk about this. There are a lot of vapes out there, a lot of vaporizers. What makes your product different from your competition?
It's our team. It's our mentality, the hard work, perseverance. I would say, first of all, on the product side, it comes down, you know, to how we differentiate ourselves from other vaporizer companies, which is very important because there is a lot of competition out there, is having that great, you know, great value, that product for the great value at that great price point. So so good tech at a good price point, having that exceptional customer service. So we not only offer a lifetime warranty, but we also do co-branding with our clients, which is huge because our clients get to build their brand with our brand. And so that creates great partners. And then also we offer a lifetime warranty. And so those are some of the main points, I think, that would differentiate ourselves from other. Another big one is we have more of that boots on the ground approach. So instead of, you know, e-commerce first, you know, and a lot of these vape companies are kind of e-commerce driven, e-commerce first, we're more brick and mortar first, boots on the ground approach, where we're out there talking to our clients twice a month, if not more, and, you know, and helping them with any warranties or new products or any competitions they want to do or buttender trainings or, you know, and on the grower side, the same thing, and just helping them with it, whatever they need. And so I think that's been a huge part of, you know, being able to tackle Washington and also being able to do that in the next states that we want to go into as well.
Yeah, and again, this is to me a marketing lesson, because a lot of people focus on e-commerce, which is great, but, you know, there's something very instant results kind of a thing with boots on the ground, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
You might be able to say, hey, we had 100 visits on our website. That means nothing. Now,
yep,
if you visited 100 stores, then you could say, listen, we visited 100 stores. They're now in our contact database. We're going to start marketing to them. And over time, out of that 100, you might close 2 or 3 immediately. And then the other, you know, then you'll start seeing, as the relationship develops, you'll see more and more start closing and closing. Nothing wrong with e-commerce. E-commerce is a must-have. But boots on the ground, I think, is very instant. Very, you know, boom, you know exactly where you stand and what's happening. So there's a certain gratification of that. And you also talked about branding. You co-branded, you know, this is so important, because if all of a sudden you have 3, 4, 5, 10 partners that you're affiliated with, it's going to reduce your marketing, and it's also going to expedite your growth.
That's exactly right. Yep. And that's been one of the big things. And not to, you know, devalue e-commerce. Obviously, we have e-commerce
right,
as well, but we put that first. And really, you hit the nail on the head right there. It's about relationships, and that's really what we kind of, you know, try to pride ourselves, our company, on, is building those relationships and really strong ones.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Because it's really, truly what it's all about. And you can just do it faster with boots on the ground. Let me ask you this. When it comes to marketing, what about public relations? Is public relations part of your marketing campaign as well?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we have an amazing PR firm that is great for any press releases, any new product that comes out, or any states that we want to roll out into. When it comes to our marketing, or our, I guess, brand development, it's again back to that, instead of traditional marketing or traditional advertising, yes, we still do that, but I would say actually 70-80% of our effective marketing is that boots on the ground, those relationships, and being out there constantly talking to them, that kind of grassroots type approach, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's talk about this real quick, because again, you know, we mentioned that you're in a very competitive market, and when it comes to dealing with competition, I want to get kind of pick your brain about this. Do you have like a mindset when it comes to, you know, dealing with competition, trying to avoid being, you know, trying to, we'd call it play the price game, you know, because sometimes when we start, quote, competing, we become this commodity and it's all about price. I mean, I think Walmart's a great example. Walmart, you know, when you think of trying to find something cheap, Walmart has earned that name. That's their brand, you know, always low prices. Nothing wrong with that, but it's sometimes hard to compete with just prices. So what about you? What's your thought on competition?
Yeah, no, that's not our strategy, is to always have the lowest price. We have a great price, though, for a great value of our product, and we try to provide the best technology for that product at that price and then continue to upgrade it while keeping the price the same. So
right.
Absolutely, we definitely, I think a lot of people say that we have a great value when it comes to that. When it comes to our competition, yeah, there, you know, I think our biggest competitor is ourselves. And,
ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and so when it comes to our team and our mentality, you know, we try to work together to really work on ourselves, just like a, you know, a football team, you know, tries to focus on themselves first. And obviously, you know, we also do market study on our competition, of course. But really, if we're the best, if Vuber is the best, then I'm not worried about the other competition. I know that we're going to be up there towards number one, or if not close to it, and I'm a very competitive guy, so absolutely, I want to be number one.
I like
so,
it. I like
yeah.
It. Well, and I hope that everybody picked up on that. Yes, you got to keep an eye on the competition, but your biggest competition is yourself. It, you know, I when you were saying that, immediately I was brought to Blockbuster was brought to mind. Here is the leader in the world when it comes to you know, we'd call it rental entertainment, and
or
they
Kodak,
disappeared.
Yep.
Kodak, another one, yeah. So because they became too complacent, they weren't trying to become, they weren't trying to evolve and become better, they disappeared. Same thing with Kodak. I mean, here's something that'll blow you away. Kodak, at one point, had all of the patents for digital photography. All of them were owned at one point by Kodak, and they didn't do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just goes to show you, and I shouldn't say they didn't do anything with them. At one point, they did roll out the, you know, a couple of, I think they had a disposable digital camera and something else. But anyway, they didn't really make it a point to compete with themselves. They wanted to remain complacent, and they just thought it wouldn't happen to them. So let's talk about this, because speaking of, I guess, you know, things that can happen, any words of wisdom that you might want to pass on to other entrepreneurs just starting out?
Yeah, prepare to not have much of a life. I mean, if you want to be successful, you're definitely going to have to put the hard work in, work, you know, 80 hours plus a week, especially the first year, and even into the second and third year, depending on how much money and how big of a team you have, obviously. But, you know, and then I would say, you know, get ready for a wild ride. It's a fun industry. Like I said, it's the Wild West, and it's changing every day. Some days, you know, I'm talking to some of our industry leaders, and we're literally, we read a new law, and we're like, we feel like we're behind literally the next day, you know, because a new law came out. So it feels like these, you know, every year is like 4 years. It's tantamount to 4 years of business, so because there's so much going on. And then, you know, don't take yourself too seriously. Have some fun, but listen to everyone. You know, gather as much information as you can on the way.
Yeah, no, I like that. Good words. Good. I think those are some, what do you call it? Definitely some good words of wisdom. It as an entrepreneur, You know, it's so funny too, because people think, oh, you're the guy in charge, so life is easier for you. And sometimes they don't realize that as the guy in charge, sometimes you're wearing 17 hats and you're working 60, 70 hours a week. And if we just had a job, that would be like a paid vacation, just having one job versus, you know, the 17 that you have. Let me ask you this.
Yep.
I want to put you on the spot a little bit. In your home state of Washington, you guys have become the number one brand. Do you think you can replicate that as you roll out across the country?
I mean, yeah. I mean, when it comes to, again, going back to those principles of keeping that high level of customer service, keeping that high value for that price point, keeping the boots on the ground approach, that's something we don't want to go away from. And obviously our lifetime warranty, people love that. And then just being able to have our team and that mentality, that hard work, be able to transfer over to those new states as we move on and roll out to new states.
I love it. I love it. And I want to emphasize this. Listen to what Brandon talked about. He talked about high value, high level of service, lifetime warranty. I don't know. Those are the three things that stuck out to me. And this is something I'm emphasizing because a lot of people think they can't compete. Well, guess what? You can compete on all of these. You know, giving outstanding service and value doesn't cost you more. A lifetime warranty, you know, that just helps you build the relationship and people trust you. I mean, when you buy something and you know you have a lifetime warranty on it, talk about peace of mind. Talk about building customer loyalty. If your customers are, you know, if you have these type of things, your customers are going to talk about you and they become your raving fans.
Well, yeah. Not only building those relationships with our end consumers through the lifetime warranty, having that relationship, but also being able to build out that co-branding program that I talked about earlier and have those really strong relationships. Again, it's all about those long-term relationships with the brick and mortar, you know, with our clients as well.
Yeah, you know what? It's amazing. And, you know, Brandon, I look forward to having you back on the show again and talking more about the vaporizing industry as well as the, what do you call it, the marijuana industry. There's so much at play here with vaping as well as some of these other things that are coming into play. Brandon Gallagher, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. All right. Good stuff there from Brandon Gallagher. How you can compete against yourself versus your competition, service, lifetime value, lifetime warranty. All of these things are things that most of us, if not all of us, can control in our world, right? You may not be able to control your competition, but you can control you competing against yourself. You can give high value. You can give great service. So we've talking about this quite a bit this week. Remember, most importantly, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.